Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Superbeats. I personally take Superbeats when I need a power boost. It's my favorite product. Superbeats gives me energy and stamina for my busy day. Right now, get a one-month supply free with your first order. Check out the Dr. Hoffman special right now at intelligentbeats.com. That's intelligentbeats.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Today we're talking to Dr. Dwight McKee. He is an integrative oncologist, having studied both alternative methods of treating cancer, along with conventional methods. And in part one, we kind of laid out his career path and his approach to cancer care. In part two, we're going to talk a little bit about a new book that he is co-author of. It's called After Cancer Care. So, Dwight, what's the purpose of that book?
Well, Ron, in part one, we talked about how difficult it is to truly combine, integrated components, especially when you start talking about botanical and nutritional supplements and special diets. Many academic cancer centers, because of the public demand, really, and they're competing for patients, will offer acupuncture, massage, music therapy, visualization, these kind of what we might term soft practices. But when you get into...
I'll go a little further. We call this sometimes CAM light.
Like
these touchy-feely kind of window dressing treatments that make it seem like you're doing some, like you meditate and relax and they massage your feet while you're getting deadly chemotherapy.
and it does have some benefits, but they draw the line at the things that I find, truly valuable. And so it was actually my friend Jerry Lamole, after going through an experience with his good friend who had small cell lung cancer.
By the way, Jerry Lamole, he has a kind of a high-profile relative?
Yes, he is Dr. Oz's father-in-law.
And, interesting.
Dr. Oz wrote the foreword to this book very kindly. And we wrote it with another oncologist, Palath Mehta, who is the new director of integrative oncology for the MD Anderson site in Cooper, New Jersey. Jerry talked with me, and I gave him a lot of stuff, and he pulled all these documents, showing that low molecular weight heparin could improve outcomes, and he had four or five different things, very well referenced, very well researched. Jerry's a good scientist as well as clinician, and the oncologist, taking care of his friend, just said, "Nope, this is the way I've always done it. I get 20% cures, and I'm not going to deviate." And so Jerry and I started talking about putting together a book about what people could do after their treatment's over to reduce their risk of relapse. And now, obviously, there is also a group of patients for whom, treatment is never really over. They've either presented with advanced disease, and not one of the curable types, like a germ cell tumor or a lymphoma, or they relapse, and they may be under treatment for a long time. And we sort of, in this book, said, this would be valuable stuff for you too, but, you certainly want to talk with your oncologist about the supplements. Because we put in very specific supplement programs for, 12 different types of cancer.
So, in other words, different supplements are appropriate to different cancer situations. It's not a one-size-fits-all. Cancer is not one monolithic problem.
Yeah, and beyond that, even within a certain cancer type, you can fine-tune nutritional and botanical support based on somebody's constitution by, looking at their tongue, reading their pulses, invoking concepts from traditional Chinese medicine, from Ayurveda. This kind of fine-tuning can really be useful, but it's not something that you can put in a book.
Right.
You need a skilled practitioner for that level. But there, chapter 8 is the supplement chapter, and it has, it has 400 and some references. So it's well referenced as to why, we would choose the particular supplement support for the particular cancer types. But the idea was, let's not try to, have a conflict with the oncologist. Let's create a program for people where they've finished treatment. And beyond that, make a sort of a call to arms in the book saying that we really need a national infrastructure of cancer rehab, just as we developed for cardiac rehab. It's paid for by insurance. They're referred by their cardiologist. If you, if you went through treatment for, say, early prostate cancer, and your oncologist said, okay, so I want you to go to, this cancer rehab program. We have it over, go over there, your insurance will cover it. Millions of people would do that. And we have, all of the interventions that we have in the book have not been studied together. We hope that Dr. Mehta may be able to do that with his position at MD Anderson, do a 5-year study to document it. But there's pretty good data on components of, like, for instance, exercise. People who exercise 150 minutes a week have roughly half the risk of relapse from people who are sedentary.
Mm-hmm.
People who are overweight. We used to think that extra abdominal fat was just stored calories, but it's actually a highly metabolically active organ, and it creates a lot of inflammatory mediators, which puts you at risk for cancer. So, sedentary lifestyle and obesity are, right up there with smoking as risk factors for many, many cancers. So we give people a way to do it themselves, and we hope to be able to stimulate a conversation at the national level that we really need to develop an infrastructure to do this. And it could literally be piggybacked on the cardiac rehab structure, which has very, good supervised exercise. People come out of cancer therapy extremely debilitated, and they've lost a huge amount of muscle mass, and they need to regain. Muscle creates a lot of compounds that we need for a sense of well-being and energy and ATP. And, when you have people who are weak and depressed, their chances of cancer coming back are much greater than somebody who's vital, active, and has really regained their strength and their health.
So it sounds like some of the treatments that you're recommending, and we'll get into some of them specifically in a moment, are to make the patient feel better. Re-energize the patient, get rid of chemo brain, reduce the debilitation.
Yep.
That's one part of it. Another part is maybe to restore the immune system or the patient's robustness, reduce their risk factors for recurrence. But another part may
right.
be that these nutraceuticals or diet changes, stress reduction, exercise, may actually help to attack the cancer cells, be sort of like a mild form of chemo, like a chemo prevention program.
That's certainly possible, Ron. That is certainly possible. We do know that cancer cells can go into a dormant state and stay there for decades. One of the most dramatic examples of that was a case that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in the 90s of a woman who, 16 years after removal of an intermediate thickness melanoma, never had a recurrence. She didn't have that on her record. She was had consented on her driver's license to be an organ donor. She was killed in a car accident, and both of her kidneys were transplanted. And both transplant recipients developed melanoma.
Wow.
The first patient died of the melanoma. The second one, they realized what was happening. They stopped the immunosuppression and let her body reject both the kidney and the melanoma.
Well, of course, it's a perfect storm because in transplantation, you take immunosuppressive medications. So you actually...
You're creating a very friendly terrain for those latent cancer cells.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I know there's very detailed information that's going to be in the book, After Cancer Care, but what are some of the supplements that are beneficial for various cancers?
Well, vitamin D is pretty much across the board. There's very strong epidemiologic evidence and a little bit of actual clinical trial evidence. But in cancer type after cancer type, people with higher levels of vitamin D have better outcomes. Now, you can't know that is cause and effect until you do an interventional study. And there have been a few of those, and those have been positive. But we like to get cancer patients 25 hydroxy vitamin D, people who've had cancer, get it into the range of 60 to 80 nanograms per mil, which is, the level that our ancestors who worked outside all the time with minimal clothing were walking around with.
So that might require 5 to 10,000 international units of vitamin D per day or more in some cases.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. What are some of the other...
Vitamin D is a big one. I think curcumin shows up in just about every protocol. That is a really useful botanical. We use a lot of botanicals that have... they assist the body to handle inflammation in a more normal way. Chronic inflammation is not normal. Acute inflammation is normal. You know, that's how the body handles infection, injury, is with acute inflammation. But when it becomes chronic, that's not a natural situation. And that raises the risk for all cancers. So many of the botanicals that we use, you could use the shorthand of anti-inflammatory, but that's actually a drug claim. So I like to say that they help the body handle inflammation in a more normal way.
Mm-hmm. What about, is melatonin part of the protocol for certain cancers?
Oh, yeah. Very definitely. Very, very, very potent hormone, very potent antioxidant, very much involved with the immune response.
Have you been daunted by some of the studies that suggest, for example, like the SELECT study shows that vitamin E and selenium not particularly helpful for prostate cancer? Or was there something wrong with that study or other forms of these nutrients
might
be beneficial?
There's something wrong with virtually... I can't point to... Well, the SUBIMAX study might be the only study that was kind of getting into the right direction. Virtually all of the studies of quote-unquote antioxidants have been designed in the system that our scientific community developed to study drugs. But nutrients are not drugs. They interact in vast networks. Drugs don't interact in vast networks. They do, what they're designed to do, which is usually to inhibit an enzyme or block some function. Which relieves a symptom, generally speaking. So the botanicals have dozens and dozens and dozens or hundreds of quote unquote targets, but they're very weak in their effects. But when you combine many of them together, you start getting pretty significant effects. If I were to design a study of antioxidants in cancer, I would use a minimum of a dozen antioxidants.
So, in other words, you're saying that one of the problems with these studies is they zero in on like one or two nutrients, and they don't use the constellation of nutrients.
They give them in high dose. They often give them in a synthetic form.
Well, yeah, right.
Which alpha tocopherol may or may not be an issue, but yeah, we have no idea what the left-handed form of alpha tocopherol does in terms of the receptors that it interacts with. Does it block the activity of the D? We don't know. Mm-hmm. But, we do know that the body only uses the right-handed form, the D form. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty silly to present it with the L form. It's just that the people who design clinical trials or scientists that work in the mainstream academic center, which is very much aligned with the pharmaceutical industry, and so they just think in those terms. So they want some pure pharmaceutical grade synthetic vitamin E for their study. Then it's easy to get a hold of. Mm-hmm. I don't subscribe to the idea that they purposefully designed these trials to fail, but they unpurposefully designed them to fail because the people who design them don't understand that nutrients function as a network, not as single players.
So what are some of the other favorites that you have among the supplements?
Boswellia is, from frankincense, is, mm-hmm. One of those compounds which has a very potent effect in helping. It is, in some models, as strong as pharmaceutical anti-inflammatories. And I've been able to substitute Boswellia for dexamethasone in some cases of glioblastoma, brain tumors.
For brain swelling.
That I was managing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's great.
I think that the supplement chapter is going to be the most controversial chapter in this book. It's likely to get the most pushback. I don't think there's going to be, any pushback against, exercise and diet and
stress reduction,
stress modification, stress management practices. I'm hoping that we can get a clinical trial done of those practices versus those practices with the nutraceuticals over a 5-year period and really see if there is a difference in relapse rate.
Well, that's great, a really exciting project. So what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? How can listeners apprise themselves of this new book? I see that it's coming out next month, but you haven't made any announcements yet.
Yeah, I think Rodale Press is publishing it. They just ran a small excerpt from it in Prevention Magazine. They're putting more things out in Men's Health and Women's Health and other magazines that are in the Rodale portfolio. Jerry Lamolle and Pallav Mehta, the other oncologist author of the book, both did a taping on the Dr. Oz show that will air sometime this month.
Oh, great. Okay.
The book. Yeah.
So look for that. The book is entitled After Cancer Care. The authors include today's guest, Dr. Dwight McKee, Dr. Gerard Lamolle, Lemole, I believe it is, and one other, other oncologist.
Dr. Pallav Mehta, M-E-H-T-A.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's very meta. M-E-T-A.
Yeah,
okay.
Very meta.
Yeah. Okay, so... And what are some other resources where people can find out about this kind of thing that you would recommend?
There are a lot of books that have been published in this sort of area for people with cancer. I like my friend Keith Block's book, Life Over Cancer. I like Lisa Altshuler's mm-hmm. book, Five to Thrive.
Yep, she's been a frequent contributor here as well.
Yeah, she does good work. Donny Yance wrote a really excellent book on adaptogens, which are the plants that specifically help the human body handle stress of any sort with greater resilience. And adaptogens are show up strongly in the cancer support programs that we use. I also didn't mention that I've been involved for the last 4 years in the design and implementation of a clinical trial of botanical and nutritional supplementation and diet in advanced breast cancer patients at Ohio State University. And our protocol is making its way through the second round with the Institutional Review Board. We're hoping it'll be approved this year, and we'll start to accrue patients. And it's kind of a pilot trial, but no trial like it has ever been done with a very robust nutritional botanical intervention in one group of women with advanced breast cancer who are otherwise being treated the same way. And then they'll have the opportunity to cross over to the other side if we see benefit from the first 6 month experience.
What are some of the things that are in the cocktail they're getting?
They'll each have a medicinal smoothie, a customized tincture blend, a tea blend, and then a lot of botanical extracts and some nutritional supplements, that amounts to something like, 60 capsules, tablets a day. So it's a pretty robust program. And this is, with conventional treatment. And we hope to be able to do serial biopsies of tumors for gene expression, which I think would be very, very interesting. Dean Ornish showed in serial biopsies of the prostate in men that, I think this was about eight years ago, men with lower-grade prostate cancers that are being treated with active surveillance were being treated with active surveillance at UCSF, where Dean is on staff, and they put patients on his program of a low-fat, plant-based diet that included soy and pomegranate, as different from what he had done in the cardiovascular cohorts that he'd worked with, and also had them doing yoga and meditating and doing psychological support group therapies, and showed a dramatic shift in the gene expression of the prostate cells in response to this very, very low-tech intervention. So we'd like to look at the tumor cells themselves. He was looking at normal prostate cells because they couldn't reliably access the tumor every time.
Well, congratulations on your really easy. I'm sorry. Congratulations on your really fantastic work to advance this very important area, which is the notion that it's neither conventional medicine nor is it bold alternative practices that depart radically from mainstream medicine. It really is an integrative approach that's going to deliver the best results for cancer patients. And I think the fact that you went, we're all thankful that you underwent that arduous fellowship in hematology and oncology to credibilize the work that you're doing now. So,
yeah, and now I have to take the recertification exam next October.
My condolences to you.
Board.
Yeah, that's one of the burdens
the
that.
For hematology.
Yeah, that's one of the burdens that doctors have to put up with. So, such as it is, that's the path we chose. Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Dwight McKee. It's capital M C, capital K E E, and good luck. And we'll all look forward to seeing the book After Cancer Care when it comes out next month. Thanks for being on
Thank
Intelligent
you so much,
Medicine.
Ron.
My pleasure.
Great to talk with you. Okay.
I'm Dr. Bye-bye. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.